Welcome to Lesson I Learned from Drinking podcast. This week we are recording live from the West End, Atlanta, Georgia, at Monday Night Garage, part of Monday Night Brewing. We will be joined by my friend, my drinking buddy, my classmate, Brock Mayers. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, but beer will be on the list since we're here at Monday Night Brewing. So look forward to the conversation. Let's get into it. All right, as I said, I'm joined here by my classmate, friend, drinking partner, Brock Mayers. We are in Monday Night Garage, part of Monday Night Brewing, here in the West End.
Which is crazy. Like, let's start there. Like, it's crazy there's a brewery in the West End.
Yeah. But we're going to get into all that. Yeah. So we got a couple beers, and we'll kind of get into all that. But, you know, first I want, you know, Brock, just kind of like introduce yourself, tell the people who you are, you know, how this came to be, us sitting here drinking beer on a Sunday.
I appreciate the invitation, Tim. My name is Brock Mayers. I'm originally from Long Island, New York. Came down to Atlanta to attend Morehouse College 100 years ago. Loved Atlanta so much, just never left. And I am a relatively newly converted beer drinker.
So you say you loved Atlanta so much, but you've been here for a while. But you have a New York hat on, and you represent New York. Yep. So talk about some of the differences between Atlanta and New York. You know, New York will always be home, of course, but, you know, what is your affection towards Atlanta?
Yeah. So, actually, a mutual friend of ours who's originally from Atlanta never fails to bring up the case that, or the idea that I've actually lived in Atlanta longer than I've lived in New York.
Yeah, people tell me the same thing about Texas, but right. Yeah, whatever.
You're right. But New York is always home, and, like, I am, you know, like, that's my foundation of, like, who I am. Atlanta and New York are two totally different places, obviously. What I love about Atlanta is that the fact that it's a little less hectic than New York while simultaneously being a major metropolitan city. It's really kind of full with a lot of culture. Life is just easier here than where life is in New York.
Yeah.
Know? So that doesn't mean that I don't love New York still. Like a large part of who I am is because I'm from New York. I love all New York sports teams. I know we're supposed to talk about that a little later as well. But just the idea of people from everywhere in the world living in an island in the northeast, you know, quadrant of the country, just see and, like, do so many different things in New York. It's just a special place. So I love Atlanta, but it doesn't – I don't love New York any less just because I don't live there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. You know, I was born and raised in Texas, and, like, I've been here. And, like, Texas is always going to be home, but, you know, me and my friends joke, like – you know, I go home to Texas, but after 3 days, I'm ready to come back to Atlanta.
It's like, 5 days for me.
Oh, it's five? Okay. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, I say for the Dallas metro area where I'm from, they're just not the same kind of diversity. There's not as big as middle class. And so, like, you end up running the same people all over the place.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't necessarily happen here. So, like, we're sitting here in Monday Night Garage, Atlanta United game is, all sorts of people are here in the West End, which is hilarious. On so many levels, but we can talk about that. Their kids playing.
Yeah.
But
somebody making waffles in the corner.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But talk a little bit about the Beltline. You know, for those who aren't familiar, Atlanta, like, you know, this is a part of the Beltline, kind of the larger Beltline projects is going on, just to kind of give people a sense who don't live in Atlanta or don't know much about Atlanta, what's going on down here.
So, like, every other major city in the country, Atlanta is going through a, let's call it urban renewal.
Yes, yeah, that's a good term for it.
Right? But we all know it's just, you know, gentrification. A certain segment of the population is, you know, thinking, you know, I don't want to live out in the outskirts anymore.
Spend an hour and a half in the car with traffic.
Exactly. So people are starting to move back into the city. And there's a lot of development in the city, which you would think, like, it's a good thing, obviously. The downside of that is that how it really kind of, you know, like, displaces a segment of the population that, for all intents and purposes, have likely been ignored for, you know, for decades. And I do think that that's the case in the area that we're in now, the West End area, where they're now... two breweries, I believe, in the West End area. I think it's one more coming, and a section of what the city is calling the Atlanta Beltline, which is basically a walk path, bike path, run path, that's looping around the city, quote unquote, bringing the city together. And it's been cool to kind of see the areas around the Beltline kind of develop. For me, the downside is who has been displaced in order to make that quote-unquote development happen. Housing in Atlanta is outpacing areas like, you know, Northern California and, you know, saying stuff like that. So good on one hand, but unfortunate for people who look like me and you. But I enjoy the Beltline. I use the Beltline 2-3 times a week, whether
Smith,
it's...
Smith, I have your chicken and waffles. Smith.
Chicken and waffles is ready. yeah. But yeah, I use the Beltline all the time, whether it be to walk or get a run in. You know, I'm around. I try to stay around.
All right, so... You know, we're going to try not to delve too far into politics here, but of course, you know, it's part of everything. You know, it's kind of the current climate that we're in, and we talk about kind of the Beltline and how there's displacement and gentrification, urban renewal, whatever term we want to use. But, I mean, some will say it's great from the city, so it just depends on what perspective.
Yep.
But on the same note, we're sitting here on a Sunday, and it is about 4:33. NFL games are going to kick off here. I believe the 4:15 kickoff time is an afternoon game here in about three weeks. And you haven't watched the NFL in a while. So can you just talk about, you know why you haven't watched the NFL? And what do you do with your time on Sunday now that you're not watching it?
So on the heels of the Colin Kaepernick protests, and him, from my perspective, being frozen out of, you know, the NFL, I decided to abstain from watching football and supporting the NFL in any way. So I don't wear paraphernalia. I don't support my favorite team of all time, the New York Giants. I don't watch football. I don't support businesses who show football, NFL football, none of that. I found myself, you know, thinking, how can I support an institution that would willingly or willfully freeze out one of the game's great, you know, talents. There are a number of, you know, quarterbacks in the league right now that would be Colin Kaepernick's, you know, backup on any team in the league at this point. And it just doesn't make sense to me that he's not playing. And so I'm not watching. So instead, just not watching did not make sense to me. So I decided to take a page out of Colin's book, and I committed myself to doing community service in place of the time that I would have spent watching football. So last season, this is when I started. I started last season, and every week I have a new community service initiative, whether it's like here in the city or I travel for work. So if I travel to another city, I try to do a community service project in that city as well. Just trying to give back and, you know, spend my time wisely.
So you don't, you know, just, you know, check on your phone, check some stats, you know, get a peep, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, word on the street is y'all have a new running back. I mean, like, you know, what's the level of engagement? Or it's like really just like completely shut out, I'm done.
Yeah, so obviously I'm pretty in tune to pop culture. So like I I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I have, you know, friends who still choose to watch football. So I hear things, but I don't actively engage in checking scores, fantasy football, anything associated with the NFL. Like I don't. Obviously, I'm a Yankees fan. I'm a Knicks fan. So I'm using ESPN to kind of, you know, follow my other teams. I love sports, obviously, but I'm not actively checking scores, you know, like checking the Giants scores, like understanding, you know, what's going on with that. And really, it's unfortunate for me because I've lived here now 20 some years, and only very recently, within the last probably 4 years, I found a New York Giants fan group. And it was cool to really kind of have that camaraderie around supporting the team that we all love. And unfortunately, like, I've missed out on that. And I won't tell a lie. Like, I miss football.
Yeah.
I miss football on Sundays. I miss going out with, you know, the Giants fan group and hanging out and you know, like,
We're better friends now that you stopped watching football. I have not, you know, taken the stance that he has, so I still watch football, and we, as long as we've known each other, had a difference in, you know, thoughts of great football teams as a Cowboy fan. But I do want to ask you, since, you know, you don't go looking for the information, so I am a Cowboys fan, and you know, I heard Dak's stance that he's taken on everything. And, you know, I guess I would ask you, I understand why people would criticize him, but what about the side of it that he's in a contract year and there's a lot of money on the table? And so, like, him kind of rocking the boat could cost him close to $100 million.
Yeah, I don't judge anybody who chooses to continue to watch football. I don't judge the players for potentially jeopardizing their livelihood. I'll say that he has a talent, a skill that he has to capitalize on for a very limited amount of time. So he has to do that. Now, I will say though that if you have players who are afraid of making a stance to stand up for what they believe in, I believe that that adds credence to Colin Kaepernick's case, right? Because they don't want to be treated the same way that Colin Kaepernick was treated.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a general understanding that if I say what's for real on my mind, I'm going to be ostracized from the league as well. And I can't afford to do that. So, you know, you gotta do what's best for you. Obviously I don't agree with his stance for whatever whatever reason he, you know, chose to, you know, to make that stance. But, at some point I think that you have to kind of stand up for, you know, the things you believe in. Like, I think 30, 40 years from now, people will look back on the sacrifice Colin Kaepernick made, and it will be similar to that, the stance that Muhammad Ali made.
Yeah.
Atlanta United popping right now.
Yeah. So just so you know, Atlanta United scored a goal.
Actually, I don't think they did.
Yeah.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they did. You know, he's about to lead the league in, I can't pronounce the first name, but Martinez. He's about to lead the league in scores, about to set a record, so... But Atlanta United is a big deal down here. Like, I mean, it is.
And it's good for the city, man. Like, all of these losing teams in the city of Atlanta, you know, like, historically across the board, like, it feels good to have a team that has a legitimate backing in the city, like, a genuine backing in the city, and people are really kind of getting behind this team. So, while I don't support the Falcons, I don't support the Braves, I don't support the Hawks, I can get behind Atlanta United because... It kind of feels good that the city is for real supporting them, unlike other schools.
And I haven't had the opportunity to go to the game, but from what I understand, the games are on a totally different level than a Falcons game, than a Hawks game, or anything else. And it goes to show, I think it speaks to Atlanta, being Atlanta an international city, that, like, football in the literal term, soccer,
right,
is literally the biggest sport in the world.
In the world, for real.
Yeah, I mean, just like... The excitement these people bring, I mean, it's on another level.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's like they're jumping up and down up there. You know, I don't know how they allow them to bring these big flags and everything in the game, and they don't allow that for football games, but that's another story for another day.
But yeah, man, I don't know what we're talking about. Oh, I think that people will look at, you know, Colin Kaepernick in the same vein that you know, people look at, you know, Muhammad Ali as far as being an activist and really kind of standing up for what's right, standing up and, you know, making a conscious decision to stand up for what they believe in.
So in that same vein, we are currently in a place where we look to kind of glorify athlete stars and different people for, like, oh, these people are doing great things. And so... You know, if you could share your thoughts on, you know, LeBron James, what he's doing, building a school, and, you know, kind of the public, you know, stances he's taking against the president, and just, like, kind of how you feel like that. I mean, I'll say that I think it's great what he's doing, but I will also stop short in putting him in the same sentence as people like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, being that he hasn't risked anything.
Sure.
He has a lot of money, he has put resources to help, you know, his community, but he hasn't put himself in a place where there's any risk at what he's doing. So that's kind of where I stand at it. Like, I appreciate what he's doing, but, you know, I saw somebody who said he's in the same vein as Martin Luther King, you know, Nelson Mandela and Malcolm X, and I'm like, that's...
Ridiculous.
Yes.
Ridiculous. Now, like, let's, you know... LeBron is a special talent, and I don't just mean that by, you know, because of what he brings to the international sport of basketball. LeBron came into the league 17, 18 years old, automatic millionaire, and has made all of the right decisions, right?
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a family.
He's upstanding. He's a great dad.
Husband.
Father.
Like, all those things. Friend. He brought about the whole team along.
Absolutely. You never hear about him in the news as far as being in the club, wilding out. He never has, like, run-ins with police officers. And you never hear... You don't even hear about LeBron, like, tricking off in his... You know, like, in a strip club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, some of his counterparts, like, you know, James Harden and, you know, Paul George getting all kind of, you know, like, strippers and prostitutes kind of pregnant. You know
what I mean? J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith, like, wilding out.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, for me, it's really difficult to, like, to kind of villainize, you know, LeBron James, regardless of who your team is and, you know, and that kind of stuff. Like, it's difficult for me to villainize that dude. He's doing tremendous work in the community. He always has done that work. You know, I think early on in his career, he had like a bicycle initiative.
Yeah,
he was getting out bikes in the hood.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, he's done so much for the community, and this whole, like, building a school thing is incredible. Let's also not get it twisted, though. There are others who have done it.
Exactly.
Right. Now, like, Jalen Rose. you know, like started a school, you know, some years ago, and I don't think he got the same type of pub, you know, that LeBron did. I mean, for obvious reasons. Look, chicken and waffles is ready. Chicken and waffles.
More chicken and waffles up.
Chicken and waffles is popping out here in Monday Night Garage.
Yeah. Smells great, too.
Absolutely. Shout out to Betty's Waffle Emporium. But
sponsor alert.
Right, right, right. Betty, you owe Tim some money. You think that's Betty?
Nah, that's not Betty.
That's not Betty?
That's definitely not Betty.
Betty, yeah, she look kind of, like, she's kind of young for Betty.
Yeah. But Smith showed up.
Who?
Smith. That's the name.
Oh, yeah, Smith. Yeah, Smith came to get his, if he would have taken any longer, I was gonna get his chicken and waffles.
For real.
Right, because it definitely looks bomb. Is it mac and cheese on there, too? Yeah.
So LeBron's not the first.
There are other people doing it. I wish that our society spent more time glorifying these types of actions from our athletes as opposed to just their athletic prowess.
Yeah.
Right? So LeBron did it. He's not the first to do it. Why aren't we glorifying everybody that's doing it? Right? You know, when our athletes are, quote unquote,
In trouble,
behaving, you know, poorly, yeah. Right? That's always in the news. Like, we always talking about that. But when they're doing good, like, that really doesn't get, you know, mentioned. And it doesn't matter who it is. Black, white, it doesn't matter. Like, we just don't talk about that as often as we should.
Yeah. All right, so with that, you got an empty cup. We're gonna take a pause.
And you need to try some different. You need to try a different beer.
You know what? We're gonna get into that. So you know what I'm saying? We're gonna take a pause. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about some beer. All right. So we got a couple beers. We're gonna kind of get into. So you know the book is Lesson I Learned from Drinking.
Yep.
And it's drinking all kinds of things. But you know, beer's not high on my list of things to do. Usually I will drink a beer if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, there's nothing else to drink.
You're trying to hydrate.
And I'm trying to hydrate. You know what I'm saying? That's when I would drink beer. But I do not start with that. But you know, you try and, you know, I'm open to try new things. So walk me through what we're about to do here.
First of all, officially congratulations on the book, fam.
Thank you.
Like,
thank you.
I know and understand this was no easy task. I've read the book cover to cover. I feel like I've learned something from the book, and I really, really enjoyed it. So, you know, kudos to you on wrapping that up.
But very quickly on that, and you as somebody who is currently in the process of getting a doctoral degree and everything that comes with that, you know, I talk in the book that I am ABD. And in the time it took me and the energy that I wrote this book, I could have done that, but I chose to do something else. I want to congratulate you on that and continue to support you in that. Anything I can do to help you achieve that, so you're Dr. Mayers.
Get right to shit.
Yeah. You go to the research. I sit down and write.
Jeez.
All right, so we're about to get into some beer.
All right.
So what we got?
So I don't know what you started with. Do you know what you started with?
You know, it's some beer and they put some mango in it to make it sweet, more like a cider.
We won't even talk about that.
All right, yeah, I don't know what it is. Yeah, exactly.
But so Monday Night Brewing is a local Atlanta brewery that I came in contact with some years ago at a beer festival. The first beer I had from them was a beer called Fu Man Brew. And it was a wheat beer that basically is kind of spiced and hop with ginger. And that was actually really good. I have since kind of moved on to explore other things. So let's try. So because I know that you drink liquor.
Yes.
We're going to try first the bourbon barrel drafty kilt. And this is going to have, this is what's known as a scotch ale that's been aged in bourbon barrels. So I, as you see, it's a whole lot darker than a lot of beer that you would be used to. The alcohol by volume is 8.5%, which is pretty high for a beer. So it's going to be kind of thicker, but it's also because it was aged in bourbon barrels, it's going to be boozy. So you're okay. going to get like those hints and notes of, you know, of bourbon and you know, bourbon and wood. So it's going to be pretty, it should be pretty flavorful. So
hey.
Salut.
Salut. It does have a lot of flavor. It's still kind of hoppy, but you know.
So yeah.
It's beer, right?
It's beer.
So that's going to happen.
It's beer. But you know, you get notes of coffee in there.
You do. It's got a, there's a sweet tinge to it as well.
That's the bourbon.
Okay.
That's the bourbon. Little bit of vanilla.
Not bad. I'm not saying I drink a pint, but you know what I'm saying?
there's a beer called Kentucky Bourbon Ale. And that actually has more of a bourbon flavor than this does. This tastes a little bit more kind of vanilla, coffee-esque. It is pretty thick though.
Yeah.
It is pretty thick. So I can imagine how like a non-beer drinker would have an issue with this and, you know, and just kind of being like, this is kind of tough to get down.
Yeah, so it's a question. How did you get into beer? Like, because you always have not been a beer drinker.
Nah, man. Like a lot of black people, yo, kind of period across the board, stereotypically. I didn't grow up liking beer. I drank beer the same way you did, because it was the last thing to kind of drink, you know, to keep the party going. I used to have a radio show 100 years ago. Shout out to my man Russ and Nick.
What up, Russ? What up, Nick?
And my man Lennox, Lenny Mercedes, who organized the first hip hop beer festival. He came on a radio show with a dude named Al Sharpton and Andres the Beatnik, and they really kind of partnered in, you know, putting on this beer festival, and they brought some beer through, and Al Sharpton introduced me to a beer called White Rascal by the Avery Brewing Company, that really kind of piqued my interest. I was like, oh, I could drink this. And then I just started going to beer festivals and just trying different things. And it was like, I kind of like this, I don't like this. And I kind of developed my own, you know, beer palate. I am by no means like a beer aficionado. Like dudes like, you know, Al Sharpton and, you know, and Lenny, my own girl, Jennifer Price, who actually also has a book. It's kind of like a guide to drinking beer. Atlanta Beer Boutique, coming soon, likely. Like, they really understand, like, brewing processes and what kind of flavors to look like. I'm in it for, this tastes good. I will continue to drink this. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that's really how I kind of, you know, consume beer. I try it. I'll try any beer. There are definitely some things I really like wheat beers for like a warm summer day like this. I like boozy beers like the beer that we're drinking right now, for like the fall, the winter. I'm just kind of now getting into IPAs. Definitely more hoppy than I'm sure that you would like. But yeah, that's how I kind of got started drinking. It's a huge, like, African-American, beer scene here in the city.
Yeah.
So it's easy to get into beer if you try.
And so that's a very intelligent way of coming at this. Me personally, I didn't get into beer, but I got into ciders. Actually was introduced to ciders by you. And, I have, you know, some regular go-to ciders right now because...
What ciders are you drinking?
So, I mean, Angry Orchard is always a go-to, but the East Siders out of Austin, whenever I can get a hold I get a hold of that.
Blood Orange.
Yeah, that Blood Orange is wonderful. They have a grapefruit that I just had. You should definitely check that out. And then, like a Strongbow. But it helps me because drinking tequila for 12 hours usually does not work out too well. So you need something to break it up. So ciders usually do that for me the same way kind of beers, do it for other people. But, I think, there are people who enjoy beer. There are people who enjoy wine. There are people who enjoy spirits, coffee, water, tea. I mean, and that's one of the things that I like to try and highlight in the book, that it's just not about liquor. It's like, really, what is it that you enjoy to do?
Yeah.
And what is it that you have learned from that? And just the idea that, you say you're not aficionado, but you're going to sit here and say, this is what I found out. I found out I like this. I don't like that. I mean, it applies toward life, that you got to realize what you do and don't like. So, definitely that's some good stuff. So
I literally drink three things in life. Like, I drink beer, water, and tequila.
Hey, man.
And the occasional ginger ale.
And there's nothing wrong with those three and four things. Right. All wonderful things. Ginger has its place. Agave has its place. Water has its place.
Absolutely.
And, and barley and wheat.
And you can place them all into my glass.
Absolutely. At the same time. Absolutely. So it's definitely, good stuff. So if you're sitting at home on a Sunday with your beautiful wife and daughter, what kind of beer's in the fridge? What's kind of your go-to?
So oddly enough, yo, I actually I don't really drink a lot at home.
Okay.
Like, I am for real, genuinely a social drinker.
But you got a lot of liquor at your house, as I've been there.
Well, yeah, because I like people to come over and drink with me. I would drink with them.
Okay.
Right. But like, I'm not a dude that's gonna come home and pour a double shot of tequila and you sit in front of the TV.
I'm that dude.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
My kids call it spicy apple juice. They told me I don't like sweets. I only drink tequila. So my kids totally judge me, but I'm that dude. But
you are teaching them the right way to do things, man. But I don't really drink at home. But if I am gonna drink at home, it's probably gonna be something light. It's gonna be a wheat beer of some sort. Or like a light IPA. Monday Night has a double IPA called Blind Pirate. It's like a blood orange IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Probably too hoppy for you, because it's still an IPA, so it is pretty hoppy. But the alcohol by volume is pretty high, and it's really kind of flavorful as well. But it's something light. But I drink with intentionality, and usually those intentions have more to do with me being outside of my home than me being home.
All right, so. We're going to talk about this other beer, but first, you said you like tequila.
I love tequila, man.
And what are some of the tequilas that kind of catch your interest when you're out?
Yeah.
When you're out and you look at the bar, you say, okay, these are what tequilas you got.
Yeah.
And, you assess the situation and say, what do you usually land on?
So just because everyone has it, it's kind of easy just to kind of drink Patron. I don't even really like Patron like that. It's good enough. Everyone has it. I think that we share a love for Casamigos.
Absolutely.
Shout out to George Clooney.
Man, I wish I could have been in the process.
Man.
That they figure that out. Like, literally, it's him and his business partner, his name is escaping me, saying we want to make a tequila we like. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like, first of all, how do you come up with, we just want to make a tequila?
Yeah.
Then they made the tequila.
George Clooney.
Yeah. Then they made the tequila, and then they had to say, the distiller said, there's too much of it, you have to start selling this. So it's okay, we'll sell it, and then to sell it for $1 billion.
Right.
So.
Like, I don't even think he acts anymore. When last time George Clooney was in a movie? He's just selling tequila out there.
He was actually on the list of highest paid actors, but had nothing to do with his acting. Everything to do with selling Casamigos.
Legitimately, what was the last movie he was in? Like, I don't remember.
That one about the soldiers with him and Brad Pitt, maybe. I don't know.
Them waffles look mad good, son.
Yeah.
Yeah, Casamigos, man, is awesome. I love that. Not
this is a responsible thing, but we were at a get-together last night, and I brought a bottle of Casamigos. And I was leaving. One of the friends looked over and said, "Half the bottle's gone. Has anybody else drank that but you?" I said, "I don't know if nobody has, but I probably did my part."
Man, listen. I'm sure someone else was out there helping you, Tim.
I'm sure they were.
I'm sure you didn't have that much.
Nah, man. Half a bottle of tequila. Who does that?
No one does that.
That's irresponsible. Reckless.
You wouldn't do that.
Nah. Not at all. All right. So what else we got?
I want to talk about tequila. Even though we're at the brewery, right?
Yeah.
But Don Diego. Have you had Don Diego?
Yes.
Don Diego is like 1A, and then Casamigos is like 1B.
All right, so are we talking Blanco, Reposado, Añejo?
Yes.
Okay.
You know what my favorite tequila is? The one in my glass.
There you go.
Right.
There you go.
So, but if I'm just at home, or like if I'm buying tequila like for like a party or like for homecoming, I'm buying Altos.
Hey. I had on my way here, and this, you know, y'all can judge me if you want. I made a margarita with Altos because that's like kind of my house margarita go to, and I couldn't find a plastic cup, so my daughter had a Hello Kitty cup. So as I was leaving the house, my wife was like, "Really, you're taking a margarita to drive with a Hello Kitty cup?" I said, "That's what's available."
Hey, all of this judgment, man. Why we didn't spend less time judging each other?
Exactly.
Let's start judging each other.
I agree.
If Steven don't come in 5 minutes, I'm taking his chicken and waffles. Oh, shit.
Okay. Oh, okay.
That's what Mike Vick got in trouble for. Let me find out dog fights is going on Sundays and Monday night.
I mean we are in a garage. It looks something like that episode from The Wire.
That's a fact. Where's cheese? But alright. So this is the IPA.
Alright, so we're back to the beer. We got another beer. There's not a dog fight going on, but Atlanta's a very dog friendly place. And so some dogs are getting to know one another. So that's just what's going on in the background. But, all right, we continue down our beer train.
All right, so this is IPA, right? It's called Brute Strength. It's 7.9 alcohol by volume, which also is really high for a beer. It's going to be kind of more like a Pilsner, obviously like in color and, you know, body. I've never had it before, so I'm not sure if it's going to be way hoppy, but you let me know what you think.
Hey, we're open to new things.
Salud.
New brother. It's not bad. Actually, that goes down better than the earlier one. It's more fresh.
It actually reminds me of, it feels a lot, it feels more like a wheat than a IPA. Lighter, it's probably, what do they call a champagne of beer? What's that?
Is it Coors?
Not Coors. Is it Coors? Whatever.
Coors, Miller, one of them.
It might, Miller High Life, I think it's a champagne
okay,
of
there
beer.
There you go.
Right. It's that kind of, you know, it's that kind of body. It's the same kind of, it hits your tongue a lot like a champagne. A little less bubbly though. But that's good actually. Less boozy than I thought it would be at 7.9, but it's good.
No, it's as good as a beer is going to be to me. Now, I started to bring a flask in here. And it would go so much easier if I had some tequila. But
we can do that as well.
I'm trying to be a rule follower.
Yeah.
As I get older.
It's overrated.
Yeah. All right. So we're up here drinking. We're talking about tequila. We're drinking about some beer, wine. And so instantly when I talk about drinking, it takes me to this place called Homecoming.
Yeah.
This magical place that there's a countdown. Let's say 60 days, maybe. F that. So we both attended Morehouse College.
We both graduated from Morehouse College.
Okay, we graduated from Morehouse College. And last week you talked to incoming freshmen.
I did.
So if you could just, for people who aren't familiar with Morehouse, HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, can you just talk about that experience, how it has kind of, you know, created the person you are and how it stays with you every day? As a person, but also, you know, as an employee there, and you continue to work on behalf of the college.
So, I'm a first generation college student. I'm a first generation American.
Where did you?
My dad is from Trinidad. My mother was from Guyana. So, when it was time to really kind of start to plan to go to college, this whole idea of like going to HBCU was never really like, my parents had no idea of what that was. They didn't even necessarily have a particularly good opinion of HBCUs either. Like coming from the Caribbean, you know, they have a fairly narrow-minded, you know, like perspective of a good education looks like this. And that wasn't HBCUs were not necessarily included in, in that picture. So, but to their credit, when I said I wanted to go to Morehouse, I had an experience where I went to a college fair and was exposed to Morehouse and said, that's where I'm going. To their credit, they never attempted to kind of dissuade me from, you know, from going to school here. And I think that when my mom dropped me off, they really saw that, you know what? This place might be good. And honestly speaking, I think that Morehouse was the best place for me, not only academically, but, you know, personally. I was a good high school student that came to school and interacted with people who were also really good high school students. So it was okay to be smart, and it was okay to, like, being smart was cool, you know? And so it made coming to school here just a real, like, special experience. Because what happens in Morehouse, what happens in the Atlanta University Center, which includes Clark Atlanta University and Spelman College, and in our time, Morris Brown College as well, that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. So it's a really special experience. It's one that has made me a more open-minded, well-rounded person, just being exposed to, you know, people from different parts of the country. I had my first plate of chicken and waffles here in the city of Atlanta, probably because of Morehouse. And the dog fights continue. It's just a real special place, man. I don't know if you noticed, but I kicked out of Morehouse my freshman year.
You know, I found that out when you were talking last week. I didn't realize that. They told you not to come back.
Yeah. They said don't. I had an 0.9 GPA. So they said don't come back.
So you enjoyed your freshman year?
I loved my freshman year, bro. Man, listen. Where do you think I learned how to drink tequila? But, I had a really good time, man. I just was not academically focused. As you remember, my I had college algebra with the Harriet Walton. Did you have Harriet Walton?
I did not.
She probably taught at Morehouse 40 years. And I showed up for the midterm, and she put a blank test on my desk, and she was like, "Are you in this class?" And I said, yes, ma'am. She was like, oh, you're not going to pass this test. Because she had, like, never seen me before. So I didn't do well academically. But thankfully for people to really kind of, you know, mentors, people that really kind of believed in my ability, they, you know, kind of came to my rescue, allowed me to come back in, kept me under their thumb. You know, Bernicia Johnson, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they really looked out for me. And I think that that's one of the special things about a place like Morehouse, is that people genuinely care about your success. And they worked towards making sure that I got everything that I needed academically and personally to make sure that I was successful once I left.
Yeah, so I had a similar kind of, like, I didn't know about Morehouse. And I came on a spring college tour, and I came to Atlanta. And I just came to Morehouse, and I met just, like, some men on the track team. I ran track and field across country there. And just as far as the level of engagement and just seeing those positive individuals kind of with the backdrop of the Olympics coming to Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
And all those things. But the thing, when I look back, I did not know about Morehouse was the fact that Martin Luther King went there, Samuel L. Jackson went there, and all
Spike Lee,
all these kind of individuals. So, like, it wasn't like the history of it. It was just like, this is a place where me as a black man can, like, feel I'm accepted, and I can gain some identity, I can learn about history, culture, and it's stuff that even in my professional career that just still stays with me and helps me no matter what environment I'm in to, like, I know who I am.
Yep.
And not, you know, kind of be concerned with, like, oh, how is this going to be perceived, how is this going to be judged or anything like that. So,
and in your professional life, I mean that's a really good foundation when you go to work in, you know, places that's not that friendly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
In your professional, like, because you have that strong foundation in your identity, not only as a man, but as an African-American man, you know, it makes it easier to kind of say it, or it makes it easier when someone meets you with, like, microaggressions and that kind of stuff, it makes it easier not for you to be like, you know what, fuck you, and
yeah,
fight them in the parking lot.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Because you know who you are, and you're kind of like, you know, like, yo, whatever. Yeah. You know, let me school you, though.
Exactly. And so because of this kind of undergraduate experience we had and people that we have gotten to know, there's this event called Homecoming.
Yeah.
That happens on an annual basis.
Yeah.
So before I ask you to describe Homecoming, I will say, as somebody who's married, has a child, the top 5 days in your year in rank order.
Well, excluding my birthday, my daughter's birthday, my wife's birthday, my anniversary, excluding those days. Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
Really, it's only three. Thanksgiving and then Christmas, I mean, because of Jesus and all.
Yeah.
And Homecoming. Like I don't need 5 days. I need three.
So takeaway family, national holidays, then Homecoming.
Well, real talk, if Christmas wasn't associated with Jesus, it'd be Thanksgiving, because I like to eat. It'd be Thanksgiving, Homecoming, Christmas. But because of Jesus trumps the Homecoming.
All right, absolutely. So, paint this picture of Homecoming for people who may not be aware of what is going to happen on October the 27th of this year.
It's my birthday weekend.
Is it?
Yeah. So you already know. You already know. You already know. So, have you ever been to a party where you felt physically just amazing, however you got there, whether it be, you know, you're just genuinely a happy person, or you've consumed some sort of beverage, whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. you feel amazing. And you're surrounded by everybody who makes you smile. Have you ever like experienced that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Multiply that by probably 3,000 people, and that's homecoming. I had never experienced anything like that, you know, before coming down here. And even as a student, homecoming was cool, but as an alum, homecoming is just really kind of special. For me, it really kind of like recharges my battery. You get beat down throughout the course of the year, whether it be work or school or family, and you know, you kind of get drained with all of your responsibilities, and then homecoming kind of comes around and you get recharged by all of the other people who are doing amazing things, and you come to the homecoming tent and you see Tim and he has his book, you know, just a stack of books, and he's like, here's my book, like I'm writing a book, and you're like, damn, Tim wrote a book. And you run into another classmate who
is mayor of a city.
Who's mayor of a city. Who's mayor of Birmingham. And you run into another classmate who, you know, just, you know, got appointed a White House correspondent, something like that. Like, it's just like those
Chief Deputy
kind
of Atlanta. The deputy assistant to the mayor of Atlanta. Stuff like that.
Who was that?
Winfield.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just like you run into those people and it just inspires you to just keep on doing the amazing things that you're doing. And it's just an incredible experience, man. Like, I know people, I've heard people like over the course of the years be like, oh, you still go to homecoming? Like, I'm kind of over it. It's kind of this, you know, the same thing all the time. And like, I don't even understand that. Because I get energized by just the feel of being at 830 Westview Drive on that Saturday in October, and it's not like anything that I've ever experienced before, and quite frankly I don't really think it happens anywhere else in the world.
You know, and what I say is it energizes me.
Are you going
to
finish this?
No, man. You got this. It energizes me because...
In homecoming spirit, I'm going to finish Tim's beer.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to waste anything. But, you know, you can talk about Socrates. You can talk about trap music. You can talk about the political landscape. You can talk about the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can... Like, and this can happen in a five-minute span.
Yep.
Like, it's that fluid.
Yep.
All while having the smell of ribs, chicken, beer, tequila, a little hint of maybe some, you know, marijuana. I mean, like it's all happening
at the same.
But
time.
But it's in a positive energy,
yeah.
And you have millionaire CEOs and just all these people who are just there just because they truly enjoy their undergraduate experience, and there's nothing like it. And like, you know, every year we say, how can we make this experience better? And I think this year we are going to take it to another level. So anybody that hears this, if you are in Atlanta on October 27th, you are welcome to come down. We have a joint tent. It will be the best homecoming ever.
Yeah.
Which is sponsored by Brock Mayers. And
shout out to the best homecoming ever committee. Valerie Taylor,
yes.
Shavana Worthen,
word.
Vignette Smith,
yep.
And Sean Sessoms.
Yeah, and then we have the, you know, the Thurman Hall basement, Cheese Beats, Tyler Mapson, Daniel Chisholm, myself, Damon Andrew, a whole lot of people. We put together that, and then the class of '98 has a tent as well, and we have created the Holy Trinity, which at the end of the night proves to be. The highlight, the culmination of a great day.
Every year, a hug never felt good until like homecoming. Like yeah, you hug somebody and be like, oh yeah, hey, how you doing? Hug. When you feel like a homecoming hug, son.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. That love, that embrace, man. Listen. Actually, one of my favorite homecoming memories. I don't know if you remember this, but we both found out that we were having kids around the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So your kids were born in April,
March.
And my daughter's born in July. So I found out like the Wednesday before homecoming. I'm not sure like when you guys knew, but it had to be not too long before that, right?
Yeah.
And we had maybe I wasn't sober conversation about it while in like the heat of homecoming. And you know, we were energized about it. It was awesome. We were all super excited. And then it was the end of the night. It was dark because there's no lights on that street. And I was walking to the bathroom. I was walking to my car. And I walked past your tent. This is before our tents were like, you know, right next to each other. And I walked past your tent and you were just in your tent by yourself. It was literally nobody else on the street. And you in a tent by yourself looking for something. And he's like, Tim, what are you looking for, bro? And he's like, I need a screwdriver. Do you mean like a tool or do you mean a vodka and orange juice? Like, what are you looking for?
It was a tool.
Right, sure. I'm sure a vodka and orange juice wouldn't have hurt in that moment, though.
Absolutely.
It was just that memory, just you just kind of rummaging around a dark tent looking for a screwdriver. Why were you looking for that screwdriver?
You know, because that year I got ambitious and I brought my gas grill out there and I would like cook breakfast in the morning, but it couldn't fit back in my car. I don't know how I got out there and I needed a screwdriver to take it apart. And, you know, it wasn't working out for me. But the funny part of that story was there were some lovely Spelman young ladies who had come to the conclusion that I had too much to drink and wanted to make sure I made it home. I said, that's fine. And so they made sure I made it home. They knocked on my door and my wife answered and she's like, oh, okay, I'm glad you made it home safe. And they later said, did she say anything about us bringing you home? I said, that wasn't her concern. Like, she's been doing this for a while.
Right.
As long as I make it home safe, we're good.
That's all that matters.
It's all that matters.
It's all that matters.
Because it's homecoming behavior.
Right.
So, nah, nothing like it. Nothing like it. So, we're about to get one more round, and we're going to come back. We're going to wrap this thing up. I thank everybody for hanging in there. But we have a couple other points we want to hit, and then we're going to keep it moving. All right, we're back. But before we go, a couple quick hitter questions for you, Brock. Quick as you can. Favorite tequila?
Don Diego.
Do you have a preference in water?
Alkaline. Not really. No, I don't. Right. Tap. I'm from New York.
All right. Do you drink, is it pop or soda?
Soda.
And what kind of soda would you drink?
Coca-Cola. Well, ginger ale.
All right. Ginger ale? Yeah. Like Canadian Dry?
Seagram's.
Seagram's. All right.
Because, you know, Seagram's.
All right. There you go. Do you drink coffee?
I don't.
Nah, neither do I.
I don't.
And this is something I want to know. Tea. Where does tea fall on the spectrum given your heritage?
Right. If I don't really drink caffeinated beverages at all, really. I don't even put chaser in my alcohol. Just an occasional ginger ale. But if I'm drinking tea, it's because I'm sick.
Okay. Powerade or Gatorade?
Gatorade. Gatorade. Powerade is like, yo, Powerade is like Reebok. Like, Like, sure, it's probably just as good of a product as Nike, but man,
it wasn't original.
Yeah.
All right. So you read the book. Is there any chapter that stands out in the book that just like, you know what, you know, this?
It was a while ago. Wasn't there a?
He's picking up the book. He's looking through chapters.
It's okay to walk away was big for me.
All right, so talk about that for a second.
It's okay to walk away was big for me. Oddly enough, I had learned this in my drinking life fairly early. I'm not one that really kinds of... I've probably overindulged to the point of being sick while drinking maybe 3 or 4 times in my life. And I think I learned in my drinking life that, like, I don't want to experience this kind of negative thing with, you know, I don't want to throw up. So I'm not going to overconsume. But like, it was just a good reminder in my personal life that it's okay to cut ties with things that just aren't really kind of good for you in that moment.
All right. And so the two last things. One, what was the most sake bombs you have ever taken in one sitting? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, man. I gotta say, sake bombs in a night, the most 10 to 15, probably.
All right.
And these last, like, probably like 3 or 4 years ago, I think we did like almost like 200 sake bombs, something like that. And we were doing those in between like tequila shots. So yeah, it was probably like 10 to 15. Yeah. That sounds reckless.
It was. And the last thing, you know, at the beginning of each chapter, I talk about, you know, a song kind of set up the chapter. So, you know, summer 2018, is there a song that you've been vibing to? Is there like currently a couple songs on your playlist that, you know, you rocking to?
So I think a lot of really good music came out this year. The Black Thought album was amazing. Well, EP was amazing. The J. Cole album was amazing. I'm ashamed to say that I really like the Cardi B album.
No, the Cardi B album, like, goes hard.
It kind of knocks, man.
Yeah. And I just like Cardi B. I mean, like, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
What you see is what you get.
It is what it is. But Fonte from Lil Brother's album was a real, like, grown man hip hop album. He talked a lot about, like, health and that kind of, like, mm-hmm. like, you know, 40-year-old health and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of good music came out this year that may not be getting like mainstream play, but just on the strength of us losing an icon, you know, this past week in Aretha Franklin.
Absolutely.
I've been listening to a lot of her music, like, you know, this past weekend and stuff. And probably one of my favorite Aretha Franklin songs is a song called One Step Ahead. It's actually the same song that Mos Def used for the Miss Fat Booty sample. And that's probably my favorite Aretha Franklin song right now, more than, you know, Respect and all those other songs. But rest in peace Aretha Franklin. But yeah, that's probably one of the songs that I've been listening to heavy in the last couple of days.
Hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time, man.
It's good time, man.
Hey, man, good time.
Good Sunday. Sunday,
hey, so,
fun day.
Yeah, so cheers.
Salute.
And we're about to go out to One Step Ahead. You know, we'll get back together, but a couple quick notes. If in Atlanta, I'll be at the Decatur Book Festival August the 31st through September 2nd. So Lesson I Learned from a Drinking will be available there. Continue to tune in. We're going to keep doing this. It'll be in Atlanta. We'll be in Chicago. We'll be all over the country checking in from different places. But until the next time, we're tuning out. Thanks.